Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 107 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling U.S. Wheat Spokesman Speaks of Wheat and Wheat's Future, about my conversation with Steve Mercer, Vice President for Communication at U.S. Wheat Associates, the organization charged with helping to facilitate, encourage, and promote U.S. wheat exports by troubleshooting problems, training staff, and educating customers around the world. I spoke with Mercer on November 15, 2018, during the Washington, Idaho, and Oregon Tri-State Grain Growers Convention held at Portland's Sheraton Airport Hotel. The hotel has a business center with individual booths for small meetings, perfect for recording a podcast. As individuals who both have the word communications in our job titles and being within a few years of age of one another, Mercer and I frequently gravitate toward each other at meetings we attend, exchanging notes on the wheat industry, but also our families. Mercer, who works within the Washington, D.C. Beltway, frequently extends my knowledge of the industry, which helps me better understand the essential nature of the global behemoth we ride. The wheat industry is enormous and has to be big because the incredible plant Northwest farmers plant by the millions of acres each year is responsible for supplying 20% of humanity's calories as well as 20% of the protein for the world's poorest. Along with weather, the wheat industry is controlled by market forces, supply and demand in most places. Less so in China, which holds 54% of the world's wheat stocks and subsidizes farmers there extravagantly to keep it that way. Ahead, you'll hear Mercer and I talk about the complaints USW has pushed the U.S. government to lodge against China at the World Trade Organization. If you stay in an industry long enough, you can see market forces work in real time. U.S. Wheat Associates closing their Cairo, Egypt office several years ago and their Moscow office in 2018 are obvious casualties of a resurgent Russian wheat production and exports. But you'll also hear Mercer express his frustration with the world media, not to mention the world grain industry's focus on the country called the Bear. I begin my conversation with Mercer by asking him whether it matters which country exports the most wheat in the world.
I think it does to an extent. But I think it reflects, well, the change has certainly reflected the change in the global demand for wheat. I mean, we see huge numbers of new consumers, new people, new higher incomes and everything. The frank answer is that production is shifting as well. New countries, particularly Russia, have done extremely well the last few years. When you think about the fact that Russia went 30 years ago from a 15 million metric ton importer of wheat to last year exporting 40 million tons, that is a huge change. So they've certainly had an influence. The media generally sort of plays it up. That's the story, conflict, and so we hear a lot about it. As we look ahead to, you know, opportunities in the world, we think that we're going to have a place where we can play, where it's going to matter. Russia and others are going to have a place where they can play too.
You just said that Russia exported 40 million metric tons of wheat, and I believe the U.S. exported 22 million tons of wheat.
That's right.
Now, what does that mean in terms of revenue coming to the farmers?
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, the U.S. has a reputation for being a high-quality supplier of wheat. Doesn't matter whether you're talking about soft white wheat or hard red spring or hard red winter, Durham, etc., excellent quality. And that quality actually brings a premium in the marketplace. So you mentioned the difference there, almost twice as much more wheat that Russia exported last year compared to ours. And yet, in terms of value, the U.S. is still generating greater value for the 20 million metric tons compared to Russia's. I think that's a two-edged sword because that means that Russia is selling their wheat for a much lower price generally. And I think, unfortunately, right now in the world, Russia is really setting the floor for wheat prices in general in the world.
You know, you mentioned the word quality, Steve. And in the Northwest, of course, we talk a lot about quality. But I've also heard millers say that they can make almost any wheat perform. Obviously, the wheat that Russia exported was milled and made into products. Is quality really being hyped?
I don't think so. I think when we look at what's happening in the world around markets, you look at South Asia, for example, the economic difference there in incomes for these people, they've gone from having snacks and all of a sudden they're starting to eat on-the-go food. They're starting to eat cookies and crackers and even having pastries. Euromonitor, for example, just recently came out with a report that showed that the greatest increase in pastry consumption is in South Asia and China. Their tastes are changing. Their desire for higher quality is changing. I actually was just in Nigeria. Now, Nigeria is a market where the Russians are doing really well because price is a big factor. But it's not the only factor. The millers there said the consumers, even though really they're only living on $2 or $3 a day, and but their tastes are changing. They know the difference between quality, so they understand that difference. We're going to see the desire for higher quality increase. Now, even look domestically, we heard recently from folks at Bimbo Bakeries, which is the largest baker in the world, they've been out publicly talking about the need for quality. Now we're talking about hard wheats, now hard red winter, hard red spring, especially hard red winter. Remarkable changes there. They said their production, daily production, has doubled in, just to keep up with demand of bread products. And what that means is they're going to need better quality, stronger gluten to handle the really the rough processing that goes on. They've got to mix that dough, process it, and get it out and bake it quickly. So they're looking for that, and they're not seeing it. They're not seeing much increase. But so quality is going to increase. And Bimbo, of course, is based in Mexico, and they are selling all over the world. So quality is going to be continue to be a really, really important factor.
Circling back again to Russia. Are we talking too much about the bear? And by that, I mean, are we missing the forest for the trees? And if we are, what's the forest?
Yeah, it's, to be honest, in the position that I am working with U.S. Wheat Associates, promoting U.S. wheat around the world, helping our team do that, I'm tired of Russia. I am tired of them winning in many ways, in terms of volume, etc. You know, Russia doubling exports, Russia doubling production, Russia, Russia, Russia. It's just constant, it seems like. But when we look ahead, and Vince Peterson, our president, has taken a pretty hard look at this, we look ahead and 81% of what Russia sells is now sold into Africa and North Africa and the Middle East. When we look out 20, 30 years, there's a dramatic need for wheat increasing in those areas because that's where the population is growing the fastest. And they're always going to be looking for lower expensive wheat. They don't necessarily need the kind of quality that we provide in spring wheat and soft white and other classes. Somebody's going to have to meet that need because they're not going to be able to grow all the wheat they need. So it's a huge market that's going to grow fast. And Russia's going to be pretty busy filling that need. Now, on the other hand, look at our markets. We have two major port areas, Pacific Northwest here, of course, and out of the Gulf. And we look at Latin America as another market that's growing for us and a high-quality market. A lot of different classes of wheat needed there. And South Asia as well. We're in a good position in the area where we feel we can compete best. Fortunately, it's also areas where folks like the quality and they're willing to pay more for it.
I'm going to push back a little bit here on you, Steve. And of that 40 million metric tons that Russia exported, 12 million metric tons went to Asia in the 2017-2018 marketing year. Could we look at this and say this is just the beginning?
I think you have to look at it kind of a snapshot of the current economic situation. Many factors at work here. Interesting one, a lot of folks probably don't realize this, but Indonesia is actually closer in sailing miles from the Russian ports than it is from the Pacific Northwest. So it actually is shorter route from Russia to Indonesia. So that's always going to be a battleground there for us. You also have Australia competing there as well. They're vertically integrated there. They own a lot of millers. The other factor that's happening is those freight rates have been low. There was a huge overbuilding of large bulk vessels that took place back when we were selling a lot and everybody said we need more wheat when the economy was good. So they built a lot of ships. Well, that's starting to change now. The freight rates have started to come up. It's going to be harder for Russia to compete in those farther away markets compared to those markets that we can serve. And again, that demand locally is going to keep them pretty busy.
All right. The U.S. withdrew from the TPP and the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Treaty, and we were at risk of losing $500 million a year due to Canada and Australia's ability to sell into that market. Now that Japan and the U.S. have announced bilateral trade talks, are we out of the woods? Is the Japanese market secure?
We're not out of the woods yet. I think that's probably the bottom line. I mean, looking at that situation, if the situation doesn't change, then starting really the beginning of 2019, the cost of U.S. wheat is going to stay at a high level. Canadian and Australian wheat is going to ratchet down every year. But the hurt's going to start in the first couple of years. So we absolutely have to see that change. The outcome is not clear. There's no doubt about it. Japan, their position is they want the U.S. back in the multilateral agreement. The U.S. wants to negotiate on a one-to-one basis. They see it as an opportunity to, I think, this is my personal guess, is they want to surround China with these agreements, and Japan is certainly one, which is why they're interested. I think there's positive too, and that is that the administration is very aware of this risk. We heard from Ambassador Greg Dowd recently at a board of directors meeting that the administration is very aware of it, and Greg certainly is. Negotiations don't always yield an answer. We're anxious to see a resolution there. We appreciate that the administration sees that, but our priority is Japan. We have to find a way out of this.
Does U.S. Wheat Associates have an opinion of President Trump's trade policies today, and has that opinion changed since he was elected?
We have been very vocal about concerns about this strategy, this tactic. It's not something we're familiar with. We are very strongly supportive of the dispute resolution system at the World Trade Organization. But look, we know China cheats. The wheat industry was one of the first to come out and say, look, they're paying their growers $10 a bushel for wheat, and they're sitting on now half of the world's wheat supply. So that's not right. And it's way beyond what they agreed to in the WTO. They haven't filled their TRQ, their tariff rate quota, ever. And we know that this is a problem. And in fact, we were a key part of bringing that dispute from the United States against China. We are glad they're dealing with it. We're glad that they're dealing with that issue. We have to deal with it. But we're looking for serious talks very soon. When we look at the negotiations with Japan, UK, and the European Union that they've announced, again, happy to see that, very much so, but Japan really has to be our priority. Here's the crucial question, really, for U.S. Wheat Associates as representatives of U.S. wheat producers, and that is, what's the fate of the relationships that today's producers, their parents, and their grandparents built over the years? What we do goes back to the 1950s, when our parents and our grandparents found themselves in a situation where they couldn't sell the wheat that they were producing. So they got together and organized. They organized state organizations, associations, and eventually commissions to promote wheat. But they went out to the government, to the federal government, and said, we need help in building these overseas markets. And it's been an extremely successful model. This is more than just a business relationship. This is a legacy of partnership between the government, between farmers, between our customers. That's the crucial question. What is the fate of that relationship? It's a challenge we're going to have to face.
Does U.S. Wheat Associates feel that the president is trying to do too much in too brief a time frame?
Well, we're all in now. It's kind of a non-answer, Scott, but we're all in. And, you know, at this point, I don't think any of us, as we heard today, unless there's some silver bullet in the negotiation and things can be solved overnight without any ramifications and things are all back to normal and good, okay, great, but that's not likely to happen. But we're all in on China for sure. And so
when you say you're all in, does that mean that you are supportive of President Trump's efforts?
It means that we are part of a strategy that's all in. We don't see that changing very soon. So at this point, we need to find ways to help see a positive resolution rather than wasting a lot of time saying, whoa, stop, do that. It's too late.
All right. Very good. There's a list of challenges facing the U.S. wheat industry today that's as long as my arm. What are the top three challenges over the next 5 years?
I think continuing to improve quality, and that's a long-term goal. We continue to hear quality is a need, not only internationally, but domestically as well. The way the industry is changing, another change that we face is new consumer tastes in terms of bread that has a lot of other ingredients in it, whole wheat that needs stronger gluten to work. The clean label movement is one that we're just starting to see an impact from. In other words, consumers basically don't want to have anything on the label that they can't pronounce. You know, we all know that, dihydrogen oxide is water, but, you know, people wouldn't want that. But that's just a consumer market, and the customer is right. Quality is going to be needed. The breeders are doing a great job. The state organizations doing a great job working toward that. I think probably the second one is, can we hold on? Can we weather this change in trade policy that has had direct effects on business? I mean, we look at China. It's roughly $69 million on an FOB basis that's at risk now that we sold last year that we're not selling this year. So can we weather that? I think probably the market always determines what's going to happen. So we'll probably continue to see a general decline in wheat production or planted area until this turns around. And it will at some point. So I think the next issue is government funding. Producers have stepped up and they have looked at providing as much funding as they possibly can. About a third of our funding comes from state commissions like Washington Grain Commission and 16 other states. But you've maxed out. I mean, there's just no more. We can't get any more blood out of that stone. That's a big issue. And we've seen volatility in the programs. Are the programs going to be funded? We have hope that they will work out a way to continue that funding. And in the past, they always have. They always come around. I think back 3-4 years ago when they were debating this issue, you know, it took months and we were, you know, facing some very real challenges, but they did come through eventually. So I think I would consider U.S. Wheat Associates and the other organizations very good stewards of the money. And so we'll work that out, but that's a big concern. There's no doubt.
Steve, I know you're a big baseball fan. I believe it's the Chicago Cubs. If we think of the world wheat market composed of various players, are you concerned that the U.S. is going to be demoted to the minor league?
I'm not. Wheat in the United States is iconic. I think producers are still going to grow wheat. In many cases, here, of course, in the Pacific Northwest, some folks don't have a choice. But they've recognized the need for quality, to improve quality, to segregate by protein so that they could answer the concerns of the marketplace. We'll keep adapting to that. I think we'll be seeing more and more customers looking for specific types of wheat, and whether that's actually contracting with producers to grow certain types of wheat, whether that is innovations in the supply chain to improve transparency for customers. I think that there's a lot of technology change, a lot of opportunity in the future. And every year for the past 10 years, except one, global demand for wheat has gone up, setting records. 1 year in the last 10. That's remarkable. It's kind of hidden under the radar when everybody talks about how much more Russia's producing, how much, you know, where they're selling it, whatever. Look, I mean, we're going to need more wheat, and we're going to need better wheat in the future. And we're going to have to produce it in ways that are better for the environment, too.
Steve, you must have mentioned quality in that last answer a half a dozen times. My question is, are the private companies who are developing wheat, are they getting that information that they need to develop quality cultivars?
I think so. So my example is, earlier this year, we visited a research facility where a private organization was developing hybrid wheat. They have a cereal chemist on staff, and the cereal chemist's job is to make sure that they're not putting their traits or creating hybrid wheat that's going to produce a lot more wheat that isn't going to be able to meld into anything. So that's a very positive sign.
U.S. Wheat has closed offices in Egypt and Russia, but you haven't opened up any new ones. Doesn't it make sense to have an ongoing presence in Indonesia, for instance? I mean, it's the world's largest wheat importer and a country that grows no wheat.
I think it depends on how you define a presence. We were just there talking to flour millers about crop quality. We do that every year. But I've been to Indonesia, and I know that we have an office in Singapore that's very close. And so we have not ignored Indonesia at all. Should we have a permanent resident there? I think we're looking into that. You know, when we look out into the future, part of the reason is because we are diminishing our direct involvement in those markets where Russia is most able to compete. And we're not abandoning them, but we're serving them differently. And we're taking the same resources and we're putting it where we think we can play.
Being devil's advocate here for a moment, are we really putting too much emphasis on Indonesia, given that it's so close to Australia? And you said earlier it's also closer to Russia than it is to the U.S.
Well, it's a battleground, and it's where the fish are. So you have to fish there, right? It's going to be a long-term effort, there's no doubt.
And there are a lot of fish. Indonesia is the fourth most populous country in the world with 265 million citizens. And unlike Egypt, which vies with Indonesia as being the biggest wheat importer in the world, tropical Indonesia grows no wheat of its own. You heard Mercer talking about the FMD. The initials stand for Foreign Market Development, a fund which helps support U.S. Wheat Associates projects overseas, in addition to Market Access Program, or MAP, funds. The good news is Congress included both in the recently passed Farm Bill, which was signed by the President on December 20, 2018. In U.S. Wheat's 2018 fiscal year, USDA awarded a total of $5.9 million in MAP funds to USW, with another $4.1 million coming out of FMD funds. That's in addition to membership funds provided by state commissions. The Washington Grain Commission contributed $611,000 in the 2017-2018 budget. I hope you enjoyed episode 107, or what I entitled, U.S. Wheat Spokesman Speaks of Wheat and Wheat's Future, about my conversation with Steve Mercer, Vice President for Communications for U.S. Wheat Associates, speaking with me November 15th, 2018, during the Washington, Idaho, and Oregon Tri-State Grain Growers Convention held in Portland. Please join me again next week for another episode of the Washington Grain Commission-sponsored podcast, Wheat All About It!
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in its head. Through a history of starvation in times of want and woe, lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when it's not enough wheat. We feed you.